Okay, we should start now. So the portable microphone is still not working. So I'll have to bend over here. Can people tell me, if I don't use the microphone, can you hear me? Or is it... Okay, so I'll try it without the microphone, although technically it's not good. In case there's somebody with hearing difficulty, I'm not allowed to. So is there somebody in the audience who has hearing difficulties that you're aware of? No. Okay, all right. Okay, so today's lecture is on, again, PCFGs. And yes, you have hearing difficulties.
Persons that are not in the lecture, the video recordings?
Yes.
Yeah.
This is a good point. Okay, so, right. I actually emailed them right now saying, you know, the microphone has still run out of batteries. And I had them in my bag, but I took them out thinking, oh, they fixed this. Now I don't need the batteries anymore. Okay, so we'll give the lecture like that. Right. So last week we talked about PCFGs. We defined what a PCFG is, and we said that the key point here is the fact that we have probabilities attached to the rules. Now, the question is, where do the probabilities come from? So today's lecture will give you an overview of how we actually get these numbers, what we can do with them. So here's the outline. First, we're going to talk about parameter estimation. And then we will discuss some issues with PCFGs. So PCFGs, I've told you, are great because they fix the ambiguity problem. Therefore, our grammars are not ambiguous. But it may be the case that they will still give us the wrong analysis. So we'll discuss the problems. And then a fix of these problems is to make them lexicalized. So I'll discuss what lexicalized and unlexicalized PCFGs are throughout this lecture. Today's lecture will conclude this... session on grammars and parsing. Friday, the lecture is short and links back to what John was talking about the Chomsky's language hierarchies. So we will discuss what exactly are the properties of natural languages. Then the first half hour I'll take up giving the short lecture, then the Erasmus coordinator will come to talk to you about exchanges. And next week, we'll start on human parsing. So human parsing is actually very interesting. Throughout this class, we've never asked the questions, what do humans actually do? Do they parse anything like what we say? Do they understand sentences like a CYK parser? So these are a couple of fun lectures on actually human processing, using the tools and the methodologies we've introduced in class. And then there's another week from me on semantics, and then it's over to John. And then we're almost at the end of this class. You'll be happy to know. Also, Friday, I will circulate an evaluation form. Apparently, we don't give you the opportunity to assess us during the course. So you'll be given this evaluation form. You're supposed to write down some things. Be kind, and remember there's two lecturers teaching this, not only myself. So this will happen on Friday. If you know anybody, tell them, your friends or whatever, who don't come today. I know some people have clashes. Tell them to come tomorrow. I keep saying Friday, thinking that Friday is far away, but it's actually tomorrow. Okay. Do I have any questions from you guys before I start with the lecture? No? Okay. Righto. Now, like we said in the PCFT, every rule is associated with a probability, and the actual question is, where do the probabilities come from? So one idea would be to actually use a large parsed corpus. And by parsed, we mean some poor humans have sat there and actually created the parse trees. This has happened. It was a huge undertaking. It took place at the University of Pennsylvania. That's why it's called the Penn Tree Bank from Pennsylvania, the Department of Computer Science. This guy who started the project is called Mitch Marcus. He's a professor there. This guy is known only for this. If you look up his citation count, and you know, for us it's important to have high citation numbers, and you know, you have some papers that have like 100 citations, and this is good. This guy's citation count is huge. It's not huge because he has created a lot of publications, and I realize now this has been taped, but he has created one and only thing, the Penn Tree Bank. And for that, he is super duper famous. So this teaches you a lesson, right? Do one thing in life and do it right. Anyway, so the Penn Tree Bank was a huge undertaking that has paid off. Because today, nowadays, we have parsers. Every single parser that there is out there, constituency-based, i.e. producing trees, because there are some parsers that don't produce trees, and I haven't talked about those, use the Penn Tree Bank. Now, the way they did it, it's actually not the fact that somebody sat there by hand. They had a parser. The parser produced some sort of analysis that were wrong. The human corrected them. Then they fed the correct analysis into the parser. The parser spat some output out. The human so there was this bootstrapping process. And every time they put more human input in, the parser would become better. And in the end, they had like this 1 million word corpus of parse trees. And the parsing people went there and had celebrations and parties. And they stayed up all night because they thought, hey, we can do parsers. Anyway, let's not get carried away. View full screen mode. Okay, this is how the Penn Tree Bank looks like. If you actually go to the corpus and open it up, it will look like that here, like this thing. So in this is some notion of a tree. And what we do, if we read this from the text file, is we will go and say, okay, I have a sentence here that goes to a subject noun phrase and a verb phrase, and this will translate as this rule. Then I have a verb phrase, where's my verb phrase? Here, that goes to a VBD, an adjectival predicate phrase, and that's it. This is this. The PP is in an NP, and my NP would be noun phrase and coordination and N. So this sentence reads, that cold empty sky was full of fire and light. And from this rendition of the Penn Tree Bank, we would go and write a program. The program would actually translate this into these rules, and then we would go and count these rules. So, easy. The rules then, we could, they're raw frequency counts, but we could easily convert into probabilities by dividing the entire rule by the left-hand side. This is called normalization. So in every PCFG, every rule is associated with a probability, and we said that we will use a large corpus. We obtain the grammar rules by reading them off the trees, and then we count the number of times the left-hand side goes to the right-hand side over the number of times the left-hand side occurs. And this formula demonstrates this here. So we have the number of times A will go to B over the number of times A will go to anything else, which we can abbreviate as the count of A goes to B over the count of A. So let's have a little example to make sure everybody understands this. We have four lovely sentences here, and the brackets denote trees. This is an abbreviation. Do people, can people understand that the brackets, it's a shorthand for having to write four different trees. So I'll read out the sentences to you. Grass grows slowly, grass grows fast. Well, it depends if you're in Scotland, it grows really fast. Bananas grow. Now, what we're going to do is we will count how many times a noun expands to a noun phrase and a verb phrase. So here it's two, okay? Then the number of times the sentence expands to a noun phrase, a verb phrase, and an adjective phrase. This is two. 2/4, this is your probability. Because we have four S's, right? That's why we divide by four. This is the left-hand side. Then we want to count how many times a noun phrase is grass. Here we have grass three times. A noun phrase appears overall four times. 3/4. Okay? Then bananas. Bananas appears once. We have four noun phrases, 1/4. Grows appears 3/4 VPs, 3/4. And grow appears once, 1/4. You will see that things have to sum up to the number of occurrences of the left-hand side. So here we have 2 and 2 makes 4, 3 and 1 makes 4, 3 and 1 makes 4, and so on. Okay? And finally, the adjective goes to fast, it's 1/2. Adjective goes to slow, it's 1/2 as well, because we have seen the adjective twice, an adjective twice. Okay, so with these rule probabilities, which are also referred to as parameters, we can now compute the probability of these sentences by simply multiplying these conditional probabilities. So if I were to work out the sentence, the probability of the first sentence, I would simply multiply the number of times rule 1 is derived from a sentence, rule 3 from a noun phrase, rule 5 from a verb phrase, and I would do the same. So basically, what I would do is I will turn these into probabilities and multiply them each time they apply. So in the first sentence, I have a sentence, a noun phrase, and a VP. So we'll look into here. Okay, there is a sentence here. There is a noun phrase, which is the grass. There is the VP, the grows, and I will multiply these numbers. And I would do this for all the other sentences, and in the end, I would get the probabilities of the rules of these three sentences. And as you can see, the first sentence is the more likely one. Now, here's a question for you. What happens if I have very long sentences? Is there a bias towards long sentences? What will happen to the probabilities? Say I have a very short sentence and a very long sentence. How will the probabilities of these look like? The long will be smaller. Up there? The long will be smaller. Oh, yes, so there is a rule, I mean, this is a law, basically. The longer thing you have and the more probabilities you have, if you multiply them, they will become smaller. This is a well-known problem, and there are... What did I press? Now? Can it disappear? Okay. Sorry, this is like the worst... Like, I'm going to be stiff. I'm talking like this. Terrible. Okay. So, yes, if I have a very long sentence, the probability is likely to be very low, which means that my parser will never pick this. But in reality, you can normalize. For example, you can divide by the number of rules and do things like that to make sure that you are treating everything equally. You can turn them into logarithms. Anyway, but this is a well-known problem, and you should be aware of this. Now, here's the question. What do we what happens if we don't have a tree bank, but we have a parser? A parser like the ones we've been discussing so far that actually gives you lots of analysis. Now, here's what we can do if we don't have a tree bank. We can take this context-free grammar and assume that all the rules have equal probability. Use the grammar to parse our corpus and then adjust the probabilities. That means that we actually count the number of times the rules have applied. Now, this is kind of reasonable because if you think about it, the rule that tells us a sentence will go to a noun phrase and a verb phrase will apply more times than a rule that tells us, I don't know, a relative clause goes to some other relative clause. It's just a fact of language that some things will tend to appear more frequently. So even if I have this non-probabilistic grammar and I apply it to a corpus, some rules will tend to fire more than others. I will count these rules and I will readjust my estimates. Now, once I readjust my estimates, immediately I don't have probabilities, rules with equal probabilities. Some are more frequent than others. So I have the revised estimates, and with those, I can do some disambiguation and parse the corpus. And so I will keep repeating this till the probabilities converge, which means the probabilities won't change, because they keep changing. Now, I've sketched here quite informally a rather important algorithm, which is called inside-outside. And it's a version of the expectation maximization algorithm called EM. Have people heard of EM before? Okay, fine. So this is an algorithm you use when you don't have any known parameters, when you don't have probabilities. It's a way of actually inferring your parameters from data. And what you could even do, but we won't discuss this in this class, is what happens if you don't even have a grammar? So here's a question to you. I don't know anything about English. Well, I'll tell you what we know. We know very little about English, and we want to infer a grammar, but we fired all the grammarians and all the linguists that exist in the world. And I just want to use the computer to actually induce a grammar from a corpus. How would I go about doing this? Get new people? No, they're dead. No, we have no, we are very poor, we've gone bankrupt. See, here's a conundrum for you guys. A human can do this. Babies learn language without knowing anything about a noun phrase, a verb phrase. They just get input. They set their parameters in the brain somehow and they acquire language. Assume we have a computer and a corpus. Similarly to the baby has a big corpus, which is what the mother and father say to them, and their grandparents and whatever, and their friends. Well, when they're babies, they don't have friends, but anyway, their environment speaks to them, and they learn how to speak. How would we go about inferring? This would be a beautiful, actually, exam question now that I think of it next year. Okay, how would we go about inferring a grammar from a corpus? So this is an answer here. He says, well, you find the patterns, and then what you do? You need to know what to look for.
You keep, because you don't know anything, but then after some time you find the pattern between them.
But what would the pattern be?
I don't know.
Okay, we have some answer here. Good answer. It's a good answer. Do how many other answers? That's not bad. That's good. That's good. So what we are going to do is we will take the words, and depending on the neighbors, left or right, we will cluster them. Clustering is a way of actually grouping words together according to their co-occurring patterns. And this will get us a bit far because they are distributionally similar. That means that words that are nouns will more likely tend to go with nouns, things that are verbs. But we don't know anything about verbs and nouns at this stage. All we know is their distributional patterns. So this will give us the parts of speech So these are going to be, you know, the terminals. How do we go about inferring the trees? Now here, I'll tell you right up front, we have to make some assumptions. Yes? You could cluster the clusters, but you have to make some assumptions about how the trees will look like. So for example, you must say they are all right branching, which is okay for English, I think, because mostly we do go down like that. So we cluster the clusters, good. We still need to get our probabilities. So this is where EM comes from. So if you're doing probabilistic clustering, you already have some probabilities about the terminals, and then you assume that the clusters, you can create many trees, and then use these trees to parse the language, update your counts. Some trees will be more frequent just because more words, some words get to happen in language more often. And you keep going, using this expectation maximization algorithm, and you'll end up with some trees. Now, here's a question to you. How well do you think this will do? Depending on the language, that's a good point. Nevertheless, 60 is a big estimate. These things will go, it will give you something like 50% accuracy. So this what I was just sketched, grammar acquisition, is a very difficult problem. Sort of advances have been made very recently, but they make a lot of assumptions about what the problem is like. So instead of having it to be unsupervised, like, you know, you have the learner do its own thing, you put assumptions, and in the end, you end up with a supervised model, i.e. a model where you tell it exactly what to do. So yes, the problem is very difficult, yet we humans can do it very efficiently. So there is this disconnect between what our computer models can do and what the human can do. And nevertheless, this is why this makes it such an interesting problem. Okay, we leave grammar induction at the moment and move on to the problems with standard PCFGs. So it turns out they're not perfect. Although they are useful for a number of applications, they often produce the wrong result when used to choose the correct parse for an ambiguous question. So you may be wondering, why is this the case? I've been screaming at you since we started, oh, we need probabilities, we need probabilities. Now that we have them, we're not happy with them. So there's two reasons. The independence of the rules in a PCFG, and we'll explain what this is, and the fact that they ignore lexical information till the very, very, very end. Till when the rule fires that tells you that the verb goes to the noun, that the verb is blah, or the verb is whatever terminal you have. Now, the question is, how can this be a mistake, or why can this be a mistake? Okay, so by definition, a context-free grammar will assume that the expansion of the non-terminals is completely independent. It doesn't matter where a non-terminal is in the analysis. In the tree. It doesn't matter, its context is irrelevant, and what else is or isn't in the analysis. And the same will hold for the PCFGs. It doesn't matter whether they have a rule, a probability or not. The probability of the rule will be the same, independent of where it is applied, and independently of what else is or isn't in the analysis. That means that the probability of a given rule doesn't change depending on its context. And this is too simplistic, and I'll give you an example. So assume we have this grammar here that tells you that a sentence up here will expand as a noun phrase and a verb phrase. The verb phrase will become a VBD, so a verb and a noun phrase. The noun phrase will be a pronoun, or a determiner and a noun. So, and we have these two trees here. Take a moment to look at them, and then I want somebody to tell me in what way are they different. Oh, I can stretch while you're thinking. How are the two trees different? So, if you look at the trees without the terminals, the rules that are applied to create them are identical. You apply the same rules that the grammar gives you. Yes.
On the first tree, firstly it goes on the right side, and on the second tree it begins on the left.
Good. This is a structural description of the phenomenon that is called, in the one case, the pronoun is the object. Someone writes something. You can have something, I don't know, the students wrote them, and then refers to the assignments, versus they wrote them, and they wrote the assignments, whereas they refers to the students. So the pronoun has a different syntactic position. This is what the gentleman was saying. Structurally, in one case it is a subject, and the other case it is an object. Now guess what? The distribution of the pronouns differs depending on whether we are speaking with our friends, i.e. informally in speech, versus whether we are writing, i.e. whether we are actually writing down a paper or an assignment or whatnot. So in a speech corpus, 91% of the subject NPs are pronouns. So if you are in a subject position, which will be reflected in your tree here, This is the subject here. They is the subject versus them being the object. So if you are in a speech corpus, most of your trees with pronouns will look like this. In written speech, so 91% are subjects, whereas 34% are objects. So within this spoken register, there is a clear bias as to what the tree should look like if you have a pronoun. Most of the times, the pronoun will be a subject. So we favor a particular tree, which is not reflected in our rules, because our rules don't know nothing about the position they are in the tree. They're applied outside of context. So the probability of the noun phrase going to pronoun should depend on where in the analysis it applies, i.e. the subject or the object. So we don't take care of this. A second and perhaps more important point is that we ignore the lexical information. So look at the grammar above, and this grammar will generate two sentences. Workers dumped sacks into a bin. Beautiful sentence, versus workers repaired cars of the queen. Both. Which one of those do you think is more likely? Given your word knowledge and what we know about the queen and what not.
Depends whether you're in the UK or not.
I think that a normal person would say that the first sentence is more likely than the second one. Okay, let's assume the first one is more likely, period. because rules for rewriting non-terminals ignore the tokens till the very end, let's just look at the part of speech tag sequences. Both words have the same sequence of part of speech tags, right? So pronoun, why do I say pronoun? Oh my God, this is a mistake. Oh, this is a mistake. So this should be, the pro should be a proper noun. Okay, not a proper noun, sorry, NNS, thank you. Whoever said this is correct. So this is an NNS. So correct it if you have printouts, and I will correct it online. Okay, so here's the trees, this is the correct output. So these are two analyses that we get from these sentences. Take a look at the analysis. And I want somebody to tell me what the differences are. Remember, the sentences are workers dumped sacks into a bin versus workers repaired sacks of the queen. And both of these are ambiguous. Both of these can have, according to the grammar I showed you, these two tree structures. The question is, which structure is more likely for which sentence? So let me ask, which tree, the left or the right one, is the more intuitive one for the worker sentence? True. For the bean versus queen sentence. So a worker's dump sucks into a bean and dump sucks into... Correct. So this sentence here, this tree here, is more appropriate for this sentence. And this left tree here is more appropriate for the queen sentence. Why? Well, we dump the sucks into a bin. So the PP here attaches to the verb versus... The cars belong to the queen, so they repaired the cars of the queen. And of the queen here, the PP attaches to the noun phrase. Now, if I'm not going to take care to take into account the lexical information, I'll be in trouble because that will be dependent on just the words, just the terminals having the right probabilities to give me the right analysis. So this doesn't seem right. So what we'll do is we'll actually lexicalize the PCFGs. And this is a fancy term, if you like, for a very simple idea, the idea of associating words and their part of the speech tags and percolating this information all the way up the tree. So a PCFG can be lexicalized by associating a word and a part of speech tag with every known terminal in the grammar. So we are lexicalizing it in the sense now we give it more information about which words the rule should apply to. And this partly will solve also the context awareness problem, because now the rules are applied not out of context, they have lexical information in them. So, and what we mean by lexicalization is head lexicalization. So if the word is the head of the constituent described in the non-terminal. We introduced the notion of heads a while back when we were doing the first lecture I gave about what a grammar is and what a head is. So each non-terminal will have a head. And the head will determine its syntactic properties. And basically, it's, if you like, the word that bears the most content in the non-terminal. Heads usually in English tend to be either on the right or in the middle of a phrase, and you can identify it very easily. It would usually be the part of speech that has some name similarity with the non-terminal. So the noun will be the head of a noun phrase, the verb will be the head of a verb phrase, the adjective will be the head of an adjectival phrase, and the preposition will be the head of a PP. So we can lexicalize a PCFG by annotating each non-terminal with its head word. And what we do is we'll have a grammar which just has rules, like this one here. And we will just go and see, okay, what is the head of the VBD here? What is the head of the VP? The head of the VP is the VBD, I dumped. So we will just substitute, we will put dumped next to the VBP. Again, for NP, what will the head of the NP be? Sucks. We'll put sucks into the NP, into to the PP, and so on and so forth. So our rules now are just not just non-terminals, are also the actual head words. And for each phrase, we have the head word it belongs to. Is the notion of the head and the percolation kind of clear? Right, I'll show you a tree as well. Okay, so this is our tree, and see, I have introduced a top node here. Ignore it for the moment, although it will become clear why we need it later on. So the sentence is, workers dumped sacks into a bin. This is the unlexicalized version. And now here's the tree. It becomes a lot bigger if we lexicalize. And the way it works is we'll first start with a verb, and we'll see, okay, what the head of the VP is, it's dumped. We'll percolate it all the way up here, here, and to the sentence. Then, why am I moving on to the PP? Because, okay. So then we'll go to the bin. The bin is the head of the noun phrase here. We'll percolate the information. Then we go to the prepositional phrase. The prepositional phrase head is into. Then we move on to workers. Again, we percolate the information up to the NP. We do the same for sacks, and we're done. Okay? Now take a look at this tree. What do you observe? So how would I estimate the probability of a verb phrase here? So I would need to know that the verb phrase dumped VBD, and I notice I didn't actually say this, and this is important. I don't only percolate up the tree the information about the words, I also give you information about the part of speech tags. So here, I don't only have sacks, but I have NNS, the part of speech tag, and the same for dumped, I have VBD. So if I am to estimate the probability of the VP, what do I have to do? So it's not a VP anymore, it's the probability of VP, open paren, dumped, comma, VBD, close paren, goes to VBD, dumped, comma, VBD, NP, sacks, comma, N, PP into P. Before, I had a very simple rule. Now, I have a rather not so simple rule with words in it. Now, remember, we have to find evidence of this rule in the corpus. I have to go and count these things. How many times in a corpus do you think I will find the sentence? Well, I will find the rules, dumped, sacks, into, with the exact same configuration. Twice. Not a lot. So I had this beautiful and lexicalized grammar, which would count things for me nicely, and I've gone and made it all sparse. Problem. So I'm not going to find anything. Never mind about the motivation of why PCFGs don't work. This thing is going to be impossible to estimate. So this would mean an enormous expansion in grammar rules with no parse corpus big enough to estimate the probability is accurate. So what do we do? Don't worry. I'll give you the general idea. We won't go into the details of this. I knew it. I could swear. But the idea is actually really nice. Okay. So if you take something from this lecture, is the following. We have this complicated sequence of rules. We need a way, and this happens always in natural language with probabilities, a clever way of breaking it down into smaller bits that we can estimate without losing the lexical information that is important. So this guy, Mike Collins, who is one of the hottest names in NLP, his thesis, he was Mitch Marcus' student, but his thesis was not like the Penn Treebank. His thesis actually revolutionized the field of parsing. Before him, he did all this stuff with lexicalization. Before him, parsers didn't work that well. So Mike Collins comes, he comes up with these parsers, and suddenly we have parsing tools that can actually give us good performances. So his idea was the following. I have a rule of the form. Left-hand side, and remember that I told you the head usually in English is in the middle. So the left-hand side will go to a head, and thinks to the left, and thinks to the right. This is the form of the rule. I will have a rule that will have a head, and some things optionally to its left, and some things to its right. So what Collins tells us to do is to have a generative model of a grammar. And by generative model, he means, well, we're going to enforce this process. We're going to say how things work, even though they don't actually work like that. So first of all, I'm going to generate the head, okay, with some probability. And don't worry about the exact form. Your rule explains what these things mean. So first of all, I'm going to generate the head. Then I'm going to generate all the things to the left, with this probability. And if I have nothing else to generate, I will just stop. This is the stop symbol. And once I generate the things to the left, I will generate the things to the right, again with the probability, and I will stop if there is nothing else to generate. So rather than estimating this big rule here, I will estimate the head, I will estimate the things to its left, and the things to its right. And I will estimate them separately, and then multiply them all together. So this kills a lot of birds with one stone. I don't have these really, really long rules, but I still have lexicalization. And let's see how it would work. So assume I want to calculate the probability of this verb phrase here, right? First of all, you'll see I introduced this stop here because there is nothing coming before dumped. And so I have this VBD thing with lots of things in it, the noun phrase, the PP, and again stop because I have to model the fact that I will stop. There will be nothing else after I consume everything to my left and right. So here, oh, you can't see it. So first of all, I do the probability of the head. That's what the model tells me. So the probability of the verb dumped given a VP, I can work out by just counting the occurrences of these things. And this is all right, because there will be other occurrences of dumped in the corpus. Then I look at my left, and there's nothing else, so I generate this stopping criterion here, which tells me you have to look to your right things, to the things right of the head. Right of the head I have sucks, so I will again estimate the probability of the noun phrase given that I have a verb phrase. And this is all right because we dump sucks a lot. We see, or at least we have things following a verb, but it's a pair of two words. It's not a sequence of a lot of things. Then I will move into the prepositional phrase, which again I will estimate with regard to dumped, the head of the phrase. So again, dump into will be something I will find in the corpus more times. And then I will stop once I generate the bins. That's it. There is no more. So if you actually want to break this down, rather than trying to find this huge occurrence, I have the probability of my head times the probability of not finding anything before it, times the probability of sucks given my head, the probability of into given this head, and the probability of stopping to the right given dumped. So I've broken down this complicated rule into lots of little rules that are all estimated with respect to my verb dumped. And this is quite clever because it makes the assumption that, look, in a phrase, the head is most important, and the head will be co-located with other things. And instead of actually trying to find a huge occurrence of things, I will find pairs of things. So this is called Model 1. You can do lots of things like introduce a distance function to take care into to take into account the fact that, you know, the further apart you go, the less likely your estimates become. And in effect, it prefers right branching structures, which is fine. And then there's a Model 2 and a Model 3, and the parser kept getting better. And I have a clicker question, which I will not ask, because we'll do it next time, because this has been a lot to take home, and I want to let you go. So here's a summary. The rule probabilities of a PCFG can be estimated by counting how often the rules occur in a corpus. The usefulness is limited by the lack of lexical information and by the independence assumptions, which we can fix by lexicalizing the grammars. Now, you'd be glad to know, or maybe not so glad, the Collins parser, actually, not very many people use these days, because no one uses phrase structure parsers anymore. Everybody does dependency parsers, which, believe it or not, capitalize on these word pairs. So, but this is interesting to see where the ideas come from. Next time, we'll talk about the complexity and the character of human languages. So in case whether you wonder whether language is actually regular or non-regular, this is what we'll be talking about. And off you go. I'll see you tomorrow.
Actually, I don't know.